Conferences. Long agendas, big venues, always on your feet, barely getting to see the people that you want to see, and then, of course, the expense. Well, the three of us at Good Morning Hospitality are launching Good Morning Retreats. Our first retreat is this July 8th through the 10th at the Horst Hospitality Training School in Auburn, Alabama. If you go to goodmorningretreats.com, you'll find out more information about our first retreat that we're launching. We have already filled half the slots. We have 20 available and we have about 13 already filled. So make sure you go there, you apply, show your interest, and we'll get you all situated for our first ever Good Morning Retreat. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. And now back to the episode.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Welcome to Good Morning Hospitality, your one-stop shop for the latest news, noteworthy trends, and thought-provoking discussions across the industry. From hotels and short-term rentals to all things travel and hospitality, you'll find each episode equips you with the information that you need to start your week. Join us on Good Morning Hospitality every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Monday, best day of the week.
Let's go.
I love that we're all now like waiting to see who's going to do it.
So scared. Who's going to go first?
I'll say it first.
There we go. We should find. Yeah, we should find like a cadence, like who goes for it. Every time the listeners never have to guess.
That's boring.
Yeah, but then it's not a race, you know?
Nor would it be true. Live. That would be scripted.
True. I know, but I'm an audio guy. I want the audio to be so good.
I am when it's scripted.
Yeah, it's true.
No
you suck. Out. You no suck point. Scripting.
Acting school, not for me.
So good, but the trio's back. The trio's back, and it feels so good. We had an amazing week last week with Max Farley, CEO and founder of Sojo, one of our partners here on the pod, and really good episode. Actually did really good on the back end numbers. I checked him this morning, and yeah, Max is a star. So love having them on as much as we can, and now getting to dive into the industry news as we saw a ton of stories, but we never get to talk a lot last week. Brandy, how was your time in Mexico City?
It was great. It was only two full days. So, but we crammed a lot in, saw a bunch of the city, got to experience, you know, doing an Airbnb in Mexico City. The building was prolific. Absolutely no one actually lives in that building. So that was pretty funny. But yeah, it's great. Mexico is so much fun and it's a quick trip. So it was great.
Love that. Love it.
I've only been once. But I was fooled by the altitude. I had no idea how high it was and how dry, and it's just like Denver, basically.
Yeah, it's great coming back and like I can feel the moisture. We got like walked off the plane and I was like, oh, humidity.
Lovely thing.
That's awesome.
Well, how are you feeling, Michael? Are you feeling you're back in fighting shape?
Yeah, so I was in Dublin 2 weeks ago and came home with COVID. It was the first time I'd had it. And quite frankly, I had a sinus infection over Christmas that was worse. So it was hardly a cold, if I could even say that, but still had to stay away from my 3-month-old. So a few days in Dublin and then another 5 or so at home without seeing the little man, but aww. Caught up over the weekend.
Good. And Will, how about you? You had a wedding this weekend?
Yeah, I was in Naples and got to feel the great humidity that you're talking about. It was a beautiful, beautiful week. I think we had, Wednesday through Sunday, got back late last night and a little sunburnt, but you know, that's the whole point of going to Florida. You get a little sun and come home and let it turn into a beautiful. No, I'm going to be a nice golden brown, a little red hair, a little golden nugget.
golden nugget.
So just really a lot of the past week or so, we've seen a lot of news on regulations, jumping right into it, and how different cities take different approaches and how those approaches backfire on the city. So we'll touch on a few different ones, but let's touch on New York. That's the biggest marquee story thus far. And our friends over at AirDNA put out some interesting stats. The year-over-year demand change, New York City is down about, call it 45%. I don't have the exact number. And equally on the other side, just across the river, is Jersey City, who is up about 55%. So what one person loses, someone else gains in this case with New York and Jersey City.
Yeah. And I mean, they really are so close that, like, if you're staying in Jersey City, you could be closer to doing the things you wanted to do than if you were staying maybe somewhere else in Manhattan. So it's really, really interesting. And I think there was also kind of another attached article that only 22% of the short-term rental applications have been approved so far. So even of the small amount that they're allowing, an even smaller amount have been approved. And so, I mean, good for Jersey and all the people that are there. I'm sure we'll start to see more professional operators kind of opening up there. But it'll also be interesting to see if New York holds with this ban. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think it's going to hold, at least in the long term. I think, obviously, they're going to try to stick to it for, I would say, the next year, give it 16, 18 months. But I think long term, I don't think it makes any real sense. The lobbyists can keep pushing, and they probably will keep pushing, and there'll probably be a ton of money going into that spot, and at least in that sense of the legislation and regulation. But yeah, I think long term it won't hold. They're going to realize how much revenue they missed out on.
There's an old saying that I've heard for years and years and years in the industry, which is bad regulation leads to black market activity. Yep. And so it's a short-term dip, and it's a big hit to Airbnb, but there's going to be some other vacuum that comes and sucks that supply in and makes that supply available. And it might just be this ever-moving target for New York City, who enforcement on these kind of rules is the hardest part. But I don't think that this is something that's going to really last. The ban itself might last, but I don't think the lack of availability and lack of supply in New York City will last.
Yeah, I will. And, you know, I have some sympathy for trying to solve a housing problem when you have such an intense rental market and so much demand for housing. But this just did not seem to be, this is not the way to go, because people still, this type of lodging is already common. It's already widely accepted. It's what people are looking for when they're traveling. So to your point, they're going to go somewhere to find it.
Or the hotel lobby keeps strong and builds hotels, but we'll get into that next. Let's touch on, what happened in Palm Springs. And this is pretty similar to what we saw in San Diego 3 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that. But Palm Springs really restricted the number of licenses. I think it's 20 per neighborhood in Palm Springs, if someone can fact check me on that. But that has resulted in a lot of properties going on the market and an approximately 20% dip in housing prices in Palm Springs as a result. So you can ban them like New York City and they'll just go to Jersey City. You can ban them in residential areas like Palm Springs and everyone will sell their house for losses. Both are bad results. One would feel a little more painful. Losing 20% on your house is pretty hefty, especially with the house that starter prices in Palm Springs.
Yeah.
The article cited a couple someone bought one for 1.1, put it $3 million into it, and they're selling it for $900 now. And it's still hasn't sold. So when you go into a town and short-term rentals are legal, you need to get somewhere in writing that they're not going to change the law on you, or it's not going to affect you. But even if you write it in to where you get grandfathered in somehow, doesn't mean they can't ban everyone else's, which still affects the home prices.
Yeah, there was an example of a guy who I think his brother died. And so he took over the home. And then they were like, nope, like it didn't even stay with the home. As soon as the ownership changed. And
it's non-transferable.
And I was like, ooh, even in the same family, that's brutal. And you think, you know, there's probably some other factors contributing to this. I think you're also seeing like the cooling from the post-pandemic like housing boom. And there's probably a touch of that. But in a city like Palm Springs, where tourism like is the economy, that's what I don't understand. And I think we can touch on this also about the regulations in Colorado, but like where in these towns where the main economy is driven by tourism, why are you making it so much more difficult? If people are upset because there are parties or things like that, I get that. If you live there, that's frustrating, but maybe come up with some better regulation that isn't going to hamstring your entire economy. Because if you like living there and you get your way and you don't have all this, you know, all these people coming in and spending money in your town, you are going to be impacted by that. Maybe not immediately, but in the next couple of years, you will start to see the negative effects of that loss of revenue.
I believe it was the next town over, La Quinta, that did a study where just the TOT from short-term rentals, the transient occupancy tax from short-term rentals, covered the entire city parks bill per year. It was like $1.5 million. So the city gets to benefit from the parks by allowing this activity to happen. The residents that are there full-time, I guess, lose if they're retirees, but if they own small businesses, they win because there's more turnover. People go to vacation homes. Typically, they have a kitchen. They might cook breakfast, but they're going to eat out. They're going to go out drinking. They're going to do activities and events and concerts and comedy shows or whatever. They're going to get out in the community and spend money, probably much more so than a permanent resident. And the really two arguments against it are affordable housing, which anywhere in California, it's not affordable. New York City, it's never been affordable.
Let's say any of these cities, though, like it's not really like, even if you look at Colorado or Denver, like it's not like any new young family can just come in and be like, all right, we're going to buy this like $1.3 million house because we could definitely afford it. It's no.
Yeah, you're not buying the 6-bedroom home in Palm Springs that's worth, you know, $3 million as your starter home. Like that home is like out of, if they were the
already unaffordable.
Exactly. And so if the conversation is about affordable housing, it's about changing some of the zoning laws to allow for more multifamily construction to build that affordable housing. And then if that's the real thing, like they did in La Quinta with funding the parks, you say, okay, all of the short-term rental revenue taxes are going to go towards building this new affordable workforce housing. And that's how you can solve. But you're not putting 5 families in a 5-bedroom home and that's solving the problem, you know?
Yeah.
Very much agreed. Very much agreed. And this, like, so the way I see it, there's like outright bans, which, like you said, Michael, that's going to still cause a black market flood where people are still going to make their money, of whether they're a host or a secret management company now. That's still going to happen no matter what. But then like the Colorado bill that's going through right now is going to commercialize basically the tax, taking it from a residential tax of 6.76% up to 27.9%. You're gonna push these people out of these homes. And the stats off of the article that I sent you guys in our group chat, most of these owners of these homes, of these vacation rentals, they live here. They're not from out of state. They're not from, another country or anything like that. They live in Colorado. They buy the second home. It's usually something to pay and make ends meet in some other areas and maybe go for the kids for college or whatever this may be. And it's just crazy. It's going to outright destroy the market. So now, cool. Housing prices and all the other things are going to be affected. And basically tourism, like you said, Michael, I was in Naples for 4 days. I don't think I spent a dime on anything other than local businesses. I didn't, you know, it was all food, like restaurant, unless it was the wedding reception. I was eating out every meal. I was buying coffee, but the amount of Ubers we took was insane. The drinks, the food, all that stuff adds up. The activities, beach parties. So it's just insane.
I'll add one more piece to that, which is the traveler experience to that destination, to that market.
Yeah, like true.
If you're traveling with a family to New York City, it just got harder to make that a destination for you. So you go somewhere else. Chicago's better than New York City anyway. Yeah,
I might have starting fights.
Let's hear the hate. Let's hear it. But same with Denver. If the taxes just went up by 21%, now your cost to go to that market increases by 21% overnight. Mm-hmm. Because surely the homeowner's not going to eat that. So the guests do. So fewer guests go. Now the local tourism and economy suffers directly as a result. So it just isn't, it's not really logical. I don't know.
No.
Well, it's funny that they're doing this in Colorado because it's right around this new like voting season, basically, for a couple of other property bills. And what's insane to me is that like the article that I sent you guys was pretty in depth, and they did some calculations, and the Evolve representative, out of like the 80 people that got to speak, 75 were against or opposing this new bill, 5 were in favor of it. But one of them was one of the kind of local representative markets for Evolve, and was talking about the impact, like outside of not only these homeowners being local to Colorado, the tourism loss of this revenue was going to be like, they estimate around $500 million. So it's like, okay, if you can lose $500 million and then think this is going to help increase, you know, funding for the schools and all these other things that they're trying to do with this revenue of this, this new tax, it just doesn't add up. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think about, and this is obviously just a personal anecdote, but I'm going on a 14 person ski trip. And so, you know, those, all the mountains around Denver that are on like the Epic Pass, we just kind of choose one. This year we chose Vail. And so we can go to kind of all the other ones, but you have to, I mean, finding a house that large is difficult. And so if you look at the price, it's already expensive, but now it's like, okay, maybe we go to Whistler or to Heavenly, way cheaper, even flying internationally could be, you know, like it starts to change. Like you might not even consider that if you're going with big groups, and the nature of the recreation in that area is large groups. Like
for sure.
That's, you know, and you just have so much stuff.
Big houses, large groups.
Yeah.
Well, and I want to know for like the Robin Cragans out there with Moving Mountains, they're in all those Marcus Vale, Steamboat, you know, all these mountain destinations for skiing, and those are big homes. But if they have it to increase their rates just to match this increase in tax of 27.9%, then good. Like they're already luxury homes, but getting push out of that bracket again is just going to be insane. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch, but I think, you know, going off the episode or the title of this episode, you know, what happens to your city when, you know, short-term rentals are banned? It's not even just banned. I think when the unfair regulation with the insane, just not even thought through type of action like this goes through, it really does crush a market. And then it's going to impact, Michael, you've seen this because you've been doing a lot of stuff, or you've been involved in a lot of regulation things since your career. And you see how it ripples through the country. It's not just, not just going to be that city. It's going to be other cities are going to try to copy the same thing. And then they're going to try to do this. And then they're going to try to mix and match. And then it's just going to be pure chaos. And then you're going to see the same thing from Vancouver, Canada, like ripple down into Washington and all the, it's a big, big butterfly effect.
And the maybe scariest piece of all we'll cover in just a second, but I did want to share an announcement that we just saw. I don't even know how to pronounce their name. I've heard it Dove. Who knows? But they just acquired EasyWay, an AI guest experiences platform. So interesting. Again, we see another vendor-to-vendor acquisition. Curious to see how that plays out. I don't know, quite frankly, much about either of those companies, to be quite honest, but kind of goes along with what we projected would happen, which is either companies will go out of business or they will be acquired. So here we are.
This is a little bit more in the hotel sector, but pretty similar acquisition from my understanding, reading about the two companies with Aperto and DAC. So very similar side, just more on the hotel sector itself. Interesting.
But they added the buzzword point. AI.
So. Of course, 100%.
Yeah, love it.
Got to add that.
You have to have it. It's
that's how you justify it to the board. But it's AI, guys.
Exactly. Yeah. AI is the new tech enabled.
Good point, Brandy.
And hello to Jeremy, as always, tuning in. Love that you're here every Monday morning.
Jeremy, all the way out in Israel, just showing up for the hotel crew, the Monday crew. Jeremy kills it. Caleb Hannon as well. Shout out to you guys all for tuning in.
So back to probably the scariest piece of news for the short-term rental industry, particularly city center Brandy, and is that Marriott has officially pinned two different U.S. properties for their Apartments by Marriott brand. And I got to say, I mean, I don't know if this image is real or just a rendering, but it looks really, really nice. So I'm curious where the price point's going to come in.
Yeah.
But it looks like a fantastic property. The two that they've inked so far, Detroit and St. Louis. St. Louis is a 50 key project. And the Detroit one is a 92 key project. So fascinating to see. Absolutely love the design. Shout out to whoever their designer is there. But I think this could be the scariest thing for short-term rental urban operators as they exist today. And do they just become hoteliers essentially and get bought out, put out of business, or I don't know, Brandy. What's your take?
And this episode's Brandy Rant brought to you by.
Go on, Brandy. Have I stirred it up enough?
In earlier prediction episodes and things like that, we were talking about what are some of the threats or maybe opportunities for urban operators. But I see that this as, I don't think this is like an existential, like totally business ruining threat, but it is like Marriott has all of the things they need, all of the tools to really excel at this. They have all the processes and all the learnings from building up a huge hotel brand. And then on the customer side, you know, we're always saying that there isn't a brand in our space that has general household recognition. Well, Marriott has that.
It is now.
Yeah, exactly. And you see this, I mean, and we can share maybe the link. It's a PR Newswire article, but it has a picture of one of the apartments and it's beautiful. And so I think in my head and some of the initial ones that they saw, you were like, this just looks kind of like a bigger, kind of boxier hotel room. But they're leveling up. And I remember when we started with Marriott Homes and Villas, I was way, way back in the beginning and they had just so much due diligence and so many details that we like tried not to give them because I was like, they're just learning how to do this by like mining all of this information basically. And that's what's happening. And so I see this being really popular with people who are already loyal Marriott travelers because we see that like, because you're not allowed to identify that really like obviously that you're a different operator, there's a lot of friction with that. Like people expecting to come into a Marriott level and I'm like a Bonvoy platinum diamond medallion, whatever member. And they have like those travelers have a certain expectation regardless of how they're booking of what their Marriott experience is going to be. So I can see those people who maybe haven't had a great experience with short-term rentals because of their expectations, they are now like, oh, I can get that from Marriott. But it's also going to take a while, right? For this to really, these are, to my knowledge, like, you know, total new buildings. And so that's not an overnight success, but I would say from the hotel players, they're the ones that are really crushing it in terms of like blending these two industries. And it is a bit of a like a wake-up call for all the urban operators, and eventually probably not even just like just urban, but in high density destinations that aren't urban. I'm thinking like the Florida Panhandle, and with going into more like condo style buildings and things like that. So they definitely have the power to be very, very serious competition. And it will be interesting to see how that plays out in their homes and villas with like that interface.
I will call it now that any supply that Marriott Homes and Villas has in Detroit or St. Louis will now be shut down. And per their typical franchise agreement, no competition within X miles. So as soon as something gets inked in Miami, Brandy, I would suspect you get a note that says,
yep,
as of this date, we will no longer service you. So I do think, I don't necessarily think it's a threat from that standpoint. To the design comment, Brandy, the first rendering made it look like a Grey Star unit, but mm-hmm. these look like upscale, like really nice.
I would live here.
I couldn't afford to live there. Yes. But they look fantastic. I probably couldn't afford to stay there, but for those loyal Marriott business travelers that are going somewhere, maybe now they can bring their family for a week. You know, if they have to be gone for a week or 2 weeks, the whole family can come now and stay at a place like this, and they can still rack up points all along the way. So from a short-term rental operator standpoint, don't love it, but broadly speaking, I think it's a very, very good play with Marriott. Fascinated to see the projected opening is Q3 for Detroit, and I don't think it gives us a date for Missouri for St. Louis, but Q3, we'll see. Maybe we'll all take a trip out to Detroit.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a very David and Goliath kind of situation, because there's just no, like, you can't compete with resources like that, where they can really, you know, I think one of the difficulties of being a short-term rental operator, regardless of location, we talk about the consistency, because it's like, not every building is built the same. I mean, when you, especially in urban markets, like the developer does like 95% of the work for you. If we could have the best cleaning, all the same stuff in every apartment, but there's some of our properties that are old and it's just not as nice, where you have or brand new construction and it looks like, you know, a 5-star property. And that's, so if Marriott has the ability to control what that design and feel and standard is, then it's very, very difficult to compete with that.
They may or may not have been collecting data for the past 3 years with their Homes and Villas product.
For sure.
Well, that's what I'm curious about. It's like, okay, the Homes and Villas I've always seen as kind of a platform, right? They're using it as a, we're not building the supply, we're just bringing the demand. You guys have the supply. Now we're building the supply and bringing the demand. What are they going to do with it? If they're, especially Michael, we'll do your comment, if they're going to, you know, serve Brandy a notice saying, hey, your competition within this new space of what we just built, sorry, we're no longer going to service you. What about all their franchises? Like, what about all these operators that they have under their Marriott flag?
They're not competitors.
They're not competitors, but if they're in the extended stay area or if they're anything else like that, then like, how are they going to feel? It's like, okay, great. Now Marriott has just built a new building next to me that I can't compete with, because again,
it's a different brand. That's how hotels do their branding. Yeah. So they'll define price parameters that Marriott apartments can do versus extended stay products can do. Extended stay products will be the 150 to 450. Apartments will be 450 to 800 or whatever it may be. So they define geolocation, they define design quality, they define price points. And so it is somewhat competitive that it's a similar product type, but it's the people that can afford to stay in a place this gorgeous in a city center are not the people that are staying at the extended stay 5 miles outside of the city.
Well, and I also think that the homes and villas aspect, like they might go towards removing urban operators, but homes and villas gives them the access to the homes and villas, you know, like that's how they can, Yeah. And, but, you know, I'm just looking at some like of our like rough numbers, and like that Marriott has become like a significant channel. And some months we do more with them than we do with Expedia. So it's, you know, it's, it would not be insubstantial if they were to say, hey, goodbye. And you know, so it's an interesting, I also do feel for the Homes and Villas team, because I feel like when you talk with them, like they are really passionate about their, you know, their product, as they should be, but they're also kind of like the stepchild from the third marriage. They're like, I feel like they're not, you know, they're competing against.
Will, is there a reason she didn't say redhead to both of us?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there is. There's a reason that she didn't say the redhead stepchild.
I, you know, I don't have any bias against the genders, so don't worry.
Okay. Appreciate it.
We all heard it here.
I'm just impressed that there's two genders on this podcast. You know, what's up? Represent diversity. Yeah, I'm very, I don't know. There's a lot of, I have a lot of questions, but didn't we, when like they announced the apartment product, didn't they announce it was going to be like a lighter staff, kind of like the similar version of all this stuff? Okay, cool. So I'm curious to see how they handle the operation. That's what I want to see. I know it's not like, it's not, you know, rocket science to turn over a home or an apartment, but still, I know it's very, very different operating models from hotel to short-term rentals. So
Marriott, we know you guys are listening. So if you want us to give a review of Detroit or St. Louis, we'd be happy to go out and check it out.
Yeah, we promise we'll give you a glowing review as long as you sponsor the podcast. Just kidding. awesome. Good episode. We're on time. Just like, you know, just like smooth operations over here. Anything exciting for you guys this week? Because I have less than 6 days before, or 5 days before I'm on a plane back to another conference. So
your conference season is starting. Yes. Well, yeah. Nothing super exciting for me, but maybe super exciting for some people that are still in the market for some new tech for the year. If you're looking for a new PMS, which it's been a big topic lately. It's been resurfacing about choosing a PMS and like your tech stack and all of that. And if you're going through that, you have my sympathies, but I would highly suggest checking out Track. The team over at TravelNet and Track can really help you through that process, make sure that the software is the best fit for you. And then also, if you're going through any marketing changes, you want a new website, a new digital marketing plan, the team at Atlas would be happy to help. And you can check them out with the link in our show notes. And then other than perfect. That, segue. I'm just trying to survive this frigid Miami winter. It is 58 degrees right now, so keep me in your thoughts.
Bless you.
Thoughts and prayers. Yeah. Golden, how about you? Anything exciting this week?
Oh, you know, same old, same old. Just plugging away. Might have some news to share next week, but we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. Ooh. Yeah. A little teaser. Yeah, have a good week, everybody.
Sweet. Well, to do what we got to do, as always, don't forget to like and subscribe to the show. Make sure if you are in the hotel space that you also listen to our hotel crew on Wednesday mornings, Steve Turk, Sarah Dandashi. They kill it. They make us go viral on YouTube. If you listen to the pod and you want to watch it, you can go to YouTube or LinkedIn. We go live every Monday and Wednesday. And of course, like always, we'll see you guys all again next week.